All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
Green blessings. This is Susan Weed, the voice of the Wise Woman Tradition and the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, welcoming you to HealthyLife.net. Thanks for tuning in for another hour of green blessings from the green heart of Susan Weed to you. I read more than 100 periodicals every month, from the strictly scientific all the way out to the edgy fringes, looking for the best, most reliable, most inclusive, and most up-to-date health information just for you, so you can maintain and regain optimum, joyous, abundant health. Join me each and every month for wise advice on herbs and health, with a special emphasis on women. Together, we will reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and reclaim herbal medicine as people's medicine. And, oh, happy holidays to you all. Here we are at the last show of the year. And it's been a year of adaptogens. We have been talking about adaptogens, talking about them in general, talking about them in specific, talking about their amazing ability to improve the functioning of the immune system, to improve the amount of energy that we feel, our longevity, our sexual interest. Is there anything adaptogens can't do? It doesn't seem like it. And that's why we're going to be continuing on in our exploration of adaptogens next year as well. So we're just going to keep rolling along on adaptogens. Meanwhile, what's in the news? Very interesting and going along with what I've been telling you all along, and that is taking vitamin supplements is going to do you more harm than good. A new study has found that high dosages of vitamin B6 or B12 supplements is associated with 3 to 4 times the lung cancer risk in male smokers. This was just published in August 2017 in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. They looked at information from more than 44,000 men aged 50 to 76, and a high intake of vitamin B6, which was 20 milligrams, or of B12, which was 55 micrograms, really increased the risk of lung cancer. The odds of developing lung cancer doubled in men, and I was especially interested in that it didn't seem to have much effect on women. B vitamins, very easy to get. Often people, as they age, are told to supplement with vitamin B12. It's a very difficult vitamin to supplement with. I think the advice that's now being put out, which is to eat protein with every meal, and especially if that protein comes from animal sources, you're going to be absolutely assured of getting vitamin B12, one of the most important vitamins to prevent dementia. What else is going on out there in the world of health news? Drink coffee, live longer. Two new large studies of diverse populations were just published, and both found that drinking coffee was associated with a modestly reduced risk of dying. Because the studies were large, the researchers were able to do analysis that helped decrease the likelihood that the benefits that are associated with coffee were due to some other factor. One of the studies looked at data from more than 185,000 U.S. adults, including African Americans, Native Hawaiians, Japanese Americans, Latinos, and whites. The other study looked at more than 520,000 adults from 10 European countries, where people prepare coffee in a variety of ways, like instant drip or espresso. And the people were followed for about 16 years in each study. As more coffee was drunk, there was less likelihood of dying. And this was true regardless of ethnicity, where people lived, and after adjusting for diet, lifestyle, and health status. In the U.S. study, coffee drinking was associated with a decreased risk of dying from heart disease, cancer, respiratory disease, stroke, diabetes, and kidney disease. In the European study, coffee drinkers had a decreased risk of dying from digestive diseases, liver diseases, and circulatory diseases like heart disease and stroke, and this is particularly true of European women. We also find that coffee drinkers have better profiles for markers of liver function, inflammation, blood sugar control, and blood lipids. In fact, coffee was associated across the board with a decreased risk of dying, especially from heart disease and diabetes, and it appears similarly protective against mortality, whether it is regular or decaffeinated. Drink coffee, live longer. The article ends on a very upbeat note, which is that these were observational studies, and so we can't really say that if you suddenly take up drinking coffee, that it would make these changes in your life. And for those of us who don't want to drink coffee but would prefer to get healthier by eating chocolate, all right, a recent study in the journal Heart showed that moderate chocolate intake was associated with a 20% decreased risk of being associated with atrial fibrillation. Hooray for chocolate and hooray for our hearts. I'll be right back to talk to you about some very interesting medicinal mushrooms. I call it the tale of two mushrooms.
Like what you hear? Tell your friends. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Green blessings. We've spent this year looking at adaptogens. And of all of the adaptogens, the ones that are most fascinating to me are mushrooms. That's why for the past few months, we have been focusing in on the adaptogenic medicinal mushrooms. My newest video course is alternative approaches for people with a diagnosis of cancer. Whether you are choosing to follow along with radiation, chemotherapy, or surgery, mushrooms can help you. Or if you don't want to do those things, mushrooms can help you. Mushrooms, it turns out, are some of the safest adaptogens to use and with truly astonishing results. We've looked at some of the commonest medicinal mushrooms so far, focusing on reishi mushrooms, cordyceps, maitake, and shiitake. There are two more mushrooms, both of which are native to the United States and which you could pretty easily find if you took a stroll in the woods, that I want to talk about. Chaga and turkey tail. You may have heard of chaga. It's become very, very popular, and people tell me that if you go to a certain commercial coffee outlet that you can get some chaga in your coffee. There's some real similarities between the chaga mushroom and the turkey tail mushroom, and there are some things that are incredibly different about these two mushrooms. The tail of two mushrooms does indeed take us out into the forest. Both of these mushrooms grow on trees. Turkey tail mushrooms grow on dead trees, logs, branches, and stumps throughout the world, basically wherever there are trees. They are one of the most common mushrooms on the planet. So any forest that you're in, just about anywhere, you'll be able to see and to find, and if you wish to, harvest turkey tail mushrooms. I don't know if you will necessarily wish to after we get done talking about how it may not be so easy to prepare them at home. But you'll certainly see them or find them. Chaga grows almost exclusively on birch trees. It is found on other related trees like aspen trees. But it is so strongly associated with birch that it is often called the birch mushroom. Turkey tail is a fairly small mushroom, and it grows in multitudes. Why is it called turkey tail? Because it looks like the feathers of a turkey tail. If you've ever seen a turkey tail, you know that the feathers are banded and they're iridescent. the turkey tail mushrooms. They're flat, leathery. Oh, the Japanese called them pieces of cloud. And so they had dropped to earth, overlapping, like the scales on a dragon. In fact, and I've seen pictures of them in all manner of different colors. They can be bright orange, they can be yellow, they can be blue when they get old, they can be invaded by something that makes them turn green. They are, of course, often the iridescent colors of a turkey's tail. But sometimes they're also just white. A huge variety of colors, and thus their botanical name, Traumates versicolor, appearing in a great many colors. Whereas the chaga is large and often singular. From a Russian herbal, chaga can be up to 4 to 5 feet long and 4 to 5 pounds in weight. Turkey tails are pretty. Chaga, to be nice, is ugly. It's rough, it's dry, it's crusty, it's deeply cut, it's crooked, it's serrated, it has the appearance of dull, charred wood. And yet, chaga has been called the highest of all herbs, the mushroom of immortality, the diamond of the forest, the gift of God. Anywhere birch trees grow, they will be infected by the fungus that causes chaga to be exuded from the bark of the birch tree. The spores settle into a crack or an opening in the birch tree and invade the heartwood of the birch. And there they set to work destroying the birch tree. As a mycelium infects and infests the birch tree, it grows more rapidly than can be contained by the tree, and it spills out into the excrescences that we call chaga. I was amazed to learn that chaga is hardened mycelium. It's not the fruiting body of the mycelium. Turkey tail is the fruiting body. There's a mycelium there, too. It's under the bark. It's white and kind of thread-like. Turkey tail has pores and spores from those pores that make the next generation. But chaga doesn't have any pores or any spores because it's not the fruiting body. It turns out that the fruiting body grows under the bark, which very rarely noticed or seen. Turkey tail and chaga, two mushrooms found in forests all over the world, including in North America. A tale of two mushrooms. Turkey tail is one of the world's most common mushrooms. I absolutely guarantee that if you have a piece of woods to walk in, even if it's a city park, you're going to see some turkey tail mushroom. It's that common. Not so with chaga. Now, I'm not saying that chaga is uncommon. In fact, it's often been compared to ginseng and golden seal. Perhaps you know that ginseng and golden seal, while they weren't uncommon, were nonetheless not abundant, and that they have been over-harvested. The American Herbalist Guild invades us to please only buy cultivated golden seal and cultivated ginseng and to protect and preserve the wild harvest. Similarly so with chaga. 5 years ago, I could take you out in my woods and show you chaga. I can't now. Every piece of chaga that's been growing from birch has been stolen from my woods all over in the Northeast. And I don't live anywhere else, so I haven't checked with people, but everywhere in the Northeast, the chaga has been hijacked. It's been taken. It's being put in coffee. it's being given to people. This is a mushroom that was rare enough that we reserved it for only the most difficult cases. In fact, the recommendations for the use of chaga are that it is to be used only for people who can't withstand surgery or radiotherapy or chemotherapy. Chaga, interestingly enough, is not thought of as an adaptogenic herb. Certainly, there are some reasons why we could think of it that way and add it into the adaptogens. But where it's been used in Russia and deep in Eastern Europe, the places that respect it the most, it has been always reserved for the very most difficult cases. Whereas turkey tail, it's a mushroom that I would very highly recommend to you. It's very, very easy to grow. It has a fairly short lifespan. Chaga can live for up to 80 years. Turkey tail mushrooms are mature by a year and dead by 2 years. They're both shelf fungi. In other words, they don't look like the mushrooms that you buy at the supermarket, which have a stalk and then a cap and gills on the underside of that cap. No, these mushrooms grow from standing woods, so they grow out like half circles, like the arcs of a rainbow from the tree, except for chaga, which of course kind of makes its own strange looking growth, because it's not actually a mushroom at all. Turkey tail has been very widely studied, and the studies are showing some pretty remarkable results from the use of turkey tail. Chaga has also been studied, but not with the same great results that we're seeing with the turkey tail. A story of two mushrooms. In many ways, they couldn't be more different. Chaga has been used in China for hundreds and hundreds of years. And although it grows in North America, no one seems to be able to track down any information about the native people here using chaga. We assume that they did, and in fact it's often called tinder fungus because it is excellent as tinder. Interestingly enough, we can't track down any information about the native population here using turkey tail mushroom either. The mushrooms that we've talked about before, reishi, maitake, and shiitake, are edible mushrooms. You can put them in your food. You can use them as food. Neither turkey tail nor chaga would in any way be confused with or substituted for any kind of food at all, although they can both be made into a tea. They're so hard, in the case of chaga, literally like a piece of dried wood, and in the case of turkey tail, like leather. Even when these are new, even when they're just emerging, they are still too tough to ever consider eating directly. Usually, both of these mushrooms are powdered and or boiled. Now, Paul Stamets makes the interesting observation that boiling is an excellent thing to do with wild mushrooms because in the wild, these mushrooms probably also have other things growing on them. I just mentioned that there's an algae that grows on turkey tail when it gets more than a year old and turns it green. And he, Paul Stamets, because he grows turkey tail in the laboratory, of course prefers a pure turkey tail, which is only that. I will mention, however, that Stephen Booner talks about a very interesting herb called usnea, which is a lichen, and that there have been found to be other mushrooms and lichens growing on that, which may increase its effectiveness. So it may actually be that the wild, as opposed to the cultivated, has a different effect because of those other organisms. So much more to tell you about turkey tail and about chaga. Let's take a little break, and we'll come right back and look in more detail at the tale of two mushrooms.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
All right. Let's look a little bit at what's going on with turkey tail mushrooms. You can, as I said, just go right out into any place where there are trees growing and find turkey tail mushrooms. They're very easy to identify. And traditionally, they have been boiled in water to make a soothing tea. Boiling kills contaminants, softens the mushroom, and extracts the rich, soluble polysaccharides. The usual dose is between 1 to 4 cups of tea or 2 to 3 grams of the dried powdered mushroom, or a milliliter, which is a dropper full, of the tincture of the mushroom 2 times a day. The mushroom or the mycelium, Paul Stamets, one of the best purveyors of mushrooms in the world, prefers to work with the mycelial mass rather than the fruiting body, although I think with turkey tail that he actually does use the fruiting body of the turkey tail. Turkey tail mushroom enhances immunity. It promotes T helper cells. And we've been learning about the immune system, and we'll finish up our work on the immune system this month. Remember, those T helper cells tell all the other cells in the immune system what to do, how to do it, and when to stop. Ooh, very important. Turkey tail mushroom can help you stave off any infection, including common colds and flus. It helps the immune system become resilient to all kinds of germs. Turkey tail modulates the immune system and enhances the population and activity of natural killer cells and other lymphocytes. Turkey tail mushrooms have been shown to help cancer patients who are going through chemotherapy. Turkey tail, in fact, is renowned in some parts of Asia as a cancer therapy. And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has conducted clinical trials on a turkey tail extract for patients with advanced prostate cancer who are undergoing chemotherapy. That specific turkey tail extract is the one that is sold by Paul Stamets, so it is something that you can actually buy. Turkey tail has been shown to be antiviral. In fact, turkey tail mycelium excretes some very strong antiviral compounds which are specifically active against human papillomavirus. That includes HPV cervical cancer, HPV anal cancer, HPV throat cancer, and hepatitis C, which of course causes liver cancer. Turkey tail also seems to counter HPV directly, according to a study of 61 patients testing positive for HPV. 88% of those who received turkey tail and reishi mushrooms were clear of that after 2 months of treatment. Wow. Turkey tail mushroom, in conjunction with some East African mushrooms, has successfully helped patients with AIDS and HIV. An extract, a polysaccharide extracted from turkey tail, has been studied in vitro, that means in a petri dish, where it does indeed prevent the replication of the HIV virus. Perhaps one of the most interesting studies done with turkey tail was done at the University of Minnesota with the help from Bastyr University, which was a multi-year study of women with breast cancer stages 1 through 3 who had completed either radiation therapy or chemotherapy. And they found that immune function was enhanced in women who took daily doses of host defense turkey tail mushroom in pill form. no side effects from taking turkey tail have ever been reported in its many of thousands of years of use or in any modern research. A 7-year study funded by the National Institutes of Health looking at the use of turkey tail mushroom to boost immunity in women with breast cancer was deemed positive. Right now, there's a study going on testing turkey tail mushroom on women with breast cancer in combination with a vaccine treatment. Turkey tail mushroom has been the subject of a large number of controlled clinical trials in Asia, where it has been demonstrated again and again that turkey tail mushroom taken with mainstream cancer therapies significantly lengthens lifespan. A stronger immune system can do a lot for us. A stronger immune system can combat cancer. A stronger immune system can spring back from chemotherapy. Immunity, as measured by the number of lymphocytes and natural killer cells, declines dramatically after radiation therapy. Turkey tail taken after radiotherapy dramatically increases both natural killer cells and CD8 and T cell activity. Over a 9-week dose escalation study, it was found that the cohort in the 9-gram daily group did better than the cohort in the 3-gram group or the 6-gram group. It turns out that one of the other ways that chaga and turkey tail are different is that if you take too much chaga, it can really hurt your kidneys, but it seems like the more turkey tail you take, the better it is. Clinical trials are going on of turkey tail in patients with breast cancer, leukemia, and liver cancer. It's also being investigated as a possible adjuvant in the treatment of gastric, esophageal, colorectal, breast, and lung cancers. Studies have shown that turkey tail mushroom helps prevent cancer recurrence and helps prevent metastatic process. Turkey tail also has antibacterial and antioxidant properties. And, like all mushrooms, it contains prebiotics that assist the microbiome, improving our mood and improving our overall health. Are there any people who shouldn't take turkey tail mushroom? If you take immunosuppressive drugs, if you have an organ transplant, then you check with your healthcare provider first. Other than that, pretty good. It is true that mushrooms can hyperaccumulate heavy metals from the air and the soil, and mushrooms grown in China have abnormally high levels of cadmium and other immunocompromising metals, but the upside of that is that mushrooms also have the ability to hyperaccumulate useful but rare minerals like selenium. In fact, if you eat selenium at the same time that you ingest mercury, it turns the mercury non-toxic. And thus, one wit has suggested always eating mushrooms with your fish. And that about wraps up our time for turkey tail. I'll be right back to talk to you about chaga.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
Continuing our tale of two mushrooms, we have just seen that we can find turkey tail pretty easily, we can use it very easily, and that a turkey tail product, which is for sale right now, has been used in studies which have found great benefit. I want to lean on that a little bit. It's not always easy to prepare or get what you need from these hard mushrooms. They can be kind of daunting to work with, and none more daunting than chaga, for sure. As a matter of fact, when I was reading in this Russian herbal, they go into to great and very exacting things, and the chaga is to be divided into 3 different parts, an outside part, an inside part, and a middle part. And the different things must be done with these different parts, and only one of those parts is medicinal. So, and I'm not telling you because I don't want people going out and grabbing the chaga. Chaga takes a long time to grow. and it's kind of a secretive plant that doesn't want to be used a lot, whereas turkey tail is like echinacea, one of those in-your-face, hey, use me, I love you, kinds of things. So chaga can be extracted into boiling water like turkey tail, also into vodka like turkey tail. And what's quite interesting about all of these mushrooms is that the polysaccharides, which some people really focus on as the important part of the plant, are mostly water-soluble, but there are other parts of the plants, lactones, saponins, and so on, which are mostly alcohol-soluble. And so sometimes you want to boil the mushroom and then use that boiled mushroom in the water that you boiled it in, mixed with some kind of alcohol to make a tincture. Chaga, as I said before, has a great folk reputation for being used in tiny amounts for a variety of things, including the worst stomach complaints. Cancer of the stomach, cancer of the intestines, cancer of the bones, cancer of the glandular organs. Any time where there's a cancer where it wouldn't be simple to do something where the patient couldn't survive radiation or chemotherapy, chaga is used. In the Atlas of Medical Plants, published in 1962 in Moscow, chaga is approved as a tea or put up in vodka for malignant indications when the patient cannot stand an operation or radiation therapy. This book goes on to say, understand that chaga can't necessarily control cancer, but it will reduce pain, give comfort, and stop or slow down the growth of the cancer at the site and far away. And I may have said it again, and I'm sure I will say it hundreds of times more. If you have a cancer diagnosis, I would say that the number one thing to do is to start taking mushrooms. Start taking mushrooms right away. Does that mean start taking chaga? Not necessarily, because mushrooms work better when they are in association with other mushrooms. I'm talking about them individually so we get to know them, so that we can pick them out and see them and understand them. But mushrooms are party people. They want to be working together, not alone. Chaga, taken at the beginning of cancer, can sometimes turn it back, and it will always prevent the spreading process. That's what we call malignancy. Time must be given for chaga, but if it is given, it will regenerate even deteriorated organs and glands. It is best to treat for from 3 to 5 months, but leave intervals while you are treating. Laboratory and animal studies show that chaga inhibits cancer progression. Laboratory and animal studies show that chaga activates immune cells, has anti-inflammatory effects, and that anti-inflammatory effect was found in a study of humans as well. Chaga is thought to be protective of the liver, but no human studies have confirmed that. In the laboratory, chaga has shown to destroy anti-tumor, anti-mutagenic, antiviral, antiplatelet, anti-diabetic, and analgesic effects. It's immunomodulating, anti-inflammatory, and pain-relieving. In some animal studies, chaga showed anti-allergic, cognition-enhancing, and antioxidant activity. Oral administration of polysaccharides from chaga increases exercise endurance and biological markers that say how much energy that we have. Extracts and constituents of chaga have been shown to have inhibitory and pro-apoptotic effects against colon cancer. I know those are very big words. What that means is it stops the cancer from growing, and it actually causes the cancer to self-destruct. Metoprolol from chaga also exerts anti-tumor effects against cervical cancer. Chaga can kill tumor cells while having no effect on healthy cells. I was almost heartbroken to read as I was researching about chaga that there are certain people who feel that we may have gone past the tipping point, that too much chaga may have already been harvested, and that there were several voices calling after, please only use cultivated chaga, and cultivated chaga is available through real mushrooms. So I don't necessarily think we're going to hurt turkey tail if you go out and want to find some and use it, but please, even if you do find chaga, buy chaga and use it mixed with other mushrooms. Chaga does contain some oxalates, and there have been a few problems with people taking large amounts of chaga over long periods of time. A 72-year-old Japanese woman had oxalate disease of the kidneys because she took 4 to 5 teaspoons of chaga powder daily for 6 months. So that kind of gives us a do not take that much of it. Whereas, again, remember that in the studies on turkey tail, we found that the more that the people took, the greater the response. A tale of two mushrooms, turkey tail and chaga. Anywhere there's trees, you're going to find turkey tail. Anywhere there's birch, you'll find chaga. Both wonderful, adaptogenic, anti-cancer mushrooms. I'll be right back to finish our study of the immune system.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
The immune system. How foolish of me to think that we could come to an understanding of the immune system in 1 8-minute segment. So this is our 3rd 8-minute segment on the immune system. At first we learned about the immune system in general and how it functions and what mistakes it can make. And then we learned about the different parts of the immune system. The thymus, the spleen, the lymphatic, the bone marrow, skin, nose, mouth, eyes, antibodies, the complement system, hormones, all different kinds of things that the immune system makes, including white blood cells. And white blood cells, also known as leukocytes, are such an important part of the immune system that we are giving them our attention for this entire segment. White blood cells are inarguably the most important part of the immune system, but they're not just white blood cells. In fact, they're a whole collection of different cells, including leukocytes, lymphocytes, monocytes, granulocytes, B cells, plasma cells, T cells, helper T cells, killer T cells, suppressor T cells, natural killer cells, neutrophils, eosinophils, basophils, phagocytes, and macrophages. Wow! All right, let's start here. All white blood cells are leukocytes. White blood cells, unlike normal cells in the body, actually act like independent single-cell organisms. They behave in our bodies much more like amoeba than like regular cells of the body. They can actually move about and they can engulf other cells and bacteria. In fact, white blood cells are very odd because many of them can't divide and reproduce on their own. But instead, they have to have a place in the body that produces them, and that place is the bone marrow. All white blood cells of all types start in the bone marrow as stem cells. And stem cells become the many different types of leukocytes as they mature. If you destroy or harm the bone marrow's ability to produce new blood cells with radiation or chemotherapy, and then inject stem cells into the bloodstream, bloodstream, they will divide and differentiate into all the types of white blood cells and find their way into the bone marrow and set up home there. Leukocytes are generally divided into three classes. Granulocytes, which make up over half of all the leukocytes, and they themselves are further subdivided into three classes. Monocytes, which make up about 7% of all leukocytes, and monocytes gradually evolve into macrophages and do somewhat different work. And then lymphocytes, which make up about 40% of all leukocytes. And lymphocytes are in two varieties, B cells, which mature in the bone marrow, and T cells that mature in the thymus gland. So let's go back to the granulocytes. And they get their name because they contain granules, and these granules contain different chemicals depending on whether the granulocyte is a neutrophil, an eosinophil, or a basophil. Neutrophils are the most common form of white blood cells, and they are very short-lived. They often live for less than a day. Bone marrow produces trillions and trillions and trillions of neutrophils every day and releases them into the bone bloodstream. They move around and they can move through capillary walls and into tissue, and they are attracted to foreign material, inflammation, and bacteria. If you get a splinter or a cut, neutrophils are attracted to that, and it will then engulf it and release enzymes, including hydrogen peroxide and other chemicals that will kill that bacteria. Eosinophils and basophils are far less common than neutrophils. Eosinophils are focused on parasites in the skin and the lungs, while basophils carry histamine and are very important in the chain of inflammation. Of course, from the immune system standpoint, inflammation is actually a good thing because it brings more blood and it dilates capillary vessels and so on. And so basophils, although there's not a lot of them, have a very important job to do. So those are some of the major leukocytes. Let's look at macrophages. Macrophages are the biggest blood cells, and that's why they're macro. Monocytes are released by the bone marrow. They float around in the bloodstream, and when they enter a tissue, they turn into a macrophage. Most boundary tissue, like the skin, the lungs, the nose, has its own devoted macrophages. For instance, there are macrophages that live in the lungs and keep the lungs healthy by ingesting foreign particles like smoke and dust, and disease-free by ingesting bacteria and microbes. There are special macrophages that live in the skin. Macrophages swim freely about, and one of their jobs is to clean up dead neutrophils. The lymphocytes handle most of the bacterial and viral infections that we get. Lymphocytes start in the bone marrow, and those that are going to become B cells continue to develop there before they go out into the bloodstream. And T cells, which have started in the marrow, migrate to the thymus and mature there. T cells and B cells may be found in the bloodstream, but they tend to concentrate in lymphatic tissue. They're found most often in the lymph nodes, the thymus, and the spleen, and they have different functions. B cells, when stimulated, mature into plasma cells, which produce antibodies. So a specific B cell is tuned to a specific germ, and when that germ is present, the B cell clones itself and produces millions of antibodies to eliminate that germ. T cells, also known as killer T cells, bump up against other cells and kill them if they're harboring a virus. Helper T cells and suppressor T cells sensitize killer T cells and help control the immune response. And these adaptogenic mushrooms are working right there. They're working right at that point with those natural killer cells, with those white cells, with the macrophages to see to it that your immune system is getting what it needs. That, believe it or not, wraps up another show here at HealthyLife.net. Happy holidays to all of you, whatever holidays you are celebrating. Let this be a time. time of goodwill and cheer. Let it be a time of feeling the gifts that we are all given. And it's a gift to me that you open your minds, your ears, and your hearts to Susan Weed and to the Wise Woman Way of Healing by Nourishing. I wish you green blessings until we meet again at HealthyLife.net.